So we have a ghost story to tell you, but not the spooky kind. This one involves tsunamis, chainsaws, samurai, and trees. This is the story of a ghost forest. So picture a verdant green Pacific Northwest forest, and right there in the middle of it is this stand of gray-white dead trees. There's no obvious reason they're dead, they just stand there, hauntingly. A couple of scientists had this hunch that the ghost forest held a secret, and the secret affects you and me and anyone else who's concerned about our region crumbling in a major earthquake. To unlock it, they would need to find out what killed the trees and, crucially, the time of death. Instead of DNA or carpet fibers or whatever those CSI people use, David Yamaguchi uses tree rings. You might remember that rings can reveal a tree's age and sometimes help pinpoint when the tree died. Well, Yamaguchi agreed to show me the ghost forest, which can be accessed by a quick paddle up the Copalis River on the Washington coast.
Basically, the trees, well, they're dead, and it's kind of mysterious why they're dead, right? They're not obviously charred by fire, and they're out here on the, you know, near the ocean. And so they're basically, you know, our local version of trees of mystery. Why are they dead?
What look like sort of scraggly, skeletal, giant sticks poking out of the ground. Trees with no branches, basically.
Yes, and more than being sticks, they're full-size trees.
Yamaguchi and geologist Brian Atwater knew that there had been tsunamis here before, so they wanted to know whether the trees died around the same time as the last major wave. For that, they needed rings.
The approach is to collect a sample from these trees that I could take home and study in a laboratory, and so I resorted to using a chainsaw and cutting rectangular holes out of the trunks.
So again, what you're doing is you're reading the pattern of the tree rings, and then you're going to match them to a tree that you know very well, how old it is and what years those rings correspond to, and that'll tell you when this thing died?
Exactly right.
So is this the kind of thing you can demo?
Okay, sure.
For Yamaguchi, this story started 30 years ago when, just out of college, he was working at Mount St. Helens, and one day Atwater visited, bringing some intriguing findings.
Presenting the first field evidence that the entire Pacific Northwest had had major earthquakes in the past.
Because we knew at that time that they had big quakes here, but not big quakes.
Right, exactly right. Big questions were, do big earthquakes happen? When, how often, what magnitude, and then, of course, the last one is, when is the next one?
Yamaguchi decided to sign on with Atwater's quest. And they had a few scattered hints. Soil layers seemed to show that the land had actually dropped in a big quake centuries ago. And there was another clue, around Nea Bay, where the Macaw people have an old legend.
And so Brian drove out to the coast and started looking at Nea Bay, which was a place that there is this native legend of the sea flowing inland and forcing the macaw to jump in their canoes and to ride through these great waves. At that point, Brian knew very little about the coast. He had only been to Nea Bay and the Neawaikum River in Willapa Bay. He began to explore, and one of the rivers he explored was the Copalis River here, where there is a Copalis ghost forest. What makes sense is that the forest was lowered into the sea. These cedars, which are intolerant of brackish water, were lowered into brackish water, and the brackish water killed them. And so the above ground trunks have been preserved, and I need intact trunks. And so he called me on the phone and said, David, you've got to come back and take a look at this cedar forest out here. And when I came back, I thought, oh, this might just work.
The clues seemed to point toward an earthquake and tsunami as the culprits. But what they didn't realize was that their mystery wasn't the only one. There was another riddle to be solved all the way across the Pacific Ocean.
So the first initial discovery, which I only published as an abstract, was the trees in the Copalis ghost forest, as well as in similar forests nearby, died sometime in the 1670s, 80s, and simultaneously radiocarbon dates told us the same thing. And we just kind of forgot about it and we went on with other projects. And a few years later, Kenji Satake in Japan heard that we had this approximate date window for potentially a large earthquake in the Pacific Northwest. First of all, by training, Kenji Satake is a tsunami modeler. And so what he does is generate an earthquake of some magnitude, for example, like 7, 8, or 9 on the Pacific Northwest coast. And then he could
run on a computer.
Right, on a computer screen. And he began to realize, oh, that if you have 8s or 9s, they should cross the Pacific and strike the Japanese coast. But the second thing that he knew was 1700 is a long time ago in terms of American history. But in Japanese history, it's nothing. Literacy arrived in Japan, I think, about the time of Buddhism in the 5th century. And then from that time, written records proliferate across the country. As a tsunami researcher, he knew that if we had had a magnitude 8 or 9 earthquake right around 1700, that it should have crossed the ocean and hit Japan. So he just opened up the right volume and literally popped out at him that, you know, up and down about 600 miles of Japanese coast were a series of villages that each reported being struck by waves. Probably most of us growing up have seen samurai movies here and there, and this was the exact time period where there were a lot of little kingdoms fighting one another, and at some point, one big kahuna takes over the country. And so once he unifies the country, first of all, he has to collect taxes. So there's all these administrative records that are kept on anything that affects the rice harvest.
So if it affected the rice harvest, it was record worthy.
Right. And so in one village, the tsunami ran into the local rice warehouse. Oh, so we cannot fully pay our taxes. In another community, you know, X number of houses were destroyed by the waves. And so they were making an appeal for wood from the government. My favorite one is of a village headman. This particular case was unusual. He writes, I have heard that if you have an earthquake, then a tsunami is something that follows. But in this case, in the vicinity of our village, we felt no earthquake.
That detail was big. If there was no local earthquake to generate the Japanese tsunami, then maybe it was caused by a superquake way over here by Washington. The trick is that the dates needed to match as exactly as possible. So the mystery wasn't solved.
Not yet. It was an intriguing argument. And so Brian asked me, do you think you could match the rings in those roots below the ground, maybe 6 feet under the ground, with your rings of your trunks? I don't think it had been done before, but we thought it was a worthwhile shot. And all but one, the outermost ring was the calendar year 1699. And so those trees were growing just fine. And then that 1700 summer, the trees were all dead.
The picture that emerged was of a wave ripping across the Pacific at about the speed of a jet airplane. Working backwards, the scientists were able to pinpoint when the quake likely happened with a freaky degree of precision. January 26th, 1700, at 9 p.m. in the darkness of a northwest winter night.
The big question that we were grappling with here that we just couldn't resolve in North America was, are we looking at a magnitude 8 event or a magnitude 9 event? Would the matching of the tree ring records here with the tsunami records in Japan, that was the first time at which magnitude 9 began to look very real. And from an engineering perspective, that really matters a lot. Engineers need to know specific numbers to build buildings by, where to put tsunami escape markers and road signs.
So what did that feel like for you to be getting what seems like the last pieces of the puzzle?
So for all scientists, I think we all strive to discover something that matters. And for most people, what you actually end up doing is just making incremental findings that specialists in your field care about, but nobody else cares. And through the quirks of fate, I had managed to make this discovery that is of significance to people who live in the Pacific Northwest.
When you go back to the ghost forest now, what feeling do you get as you walk among those ghostly trees?
To me, it's just sort of the same majesty of the forest that I appreciated as a high school student, that, you know, we could be living here as residents of the Pacific Northwest and within a few hours drive of home, walk among these giants from the past.
Dr. David Yamaguchi is a dendrochronologist, a tree ring expert in Seattle.